Bumblebee, Bumblebee, Bee. Welcome to the Immersed Podcast. We are your hosts, Alex O'Keefe and Dan Ramsden. We are also founders of Immersed Recovery, where we are building the home of recovery for everyday and world-class athletes.
We aim to immerse you in education via our guests, bring communities together, embrace positive change, and help create solid habits that yield the path for our health and longevity.
Right, here we go.
Good afternoon.
Ricky Moore.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Immersed Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. I want to kick it off with this one, mate. I met you in 2007. Can you remember that one?
Is that how long ago it was?
That's how long ago it was.
At Fitness First?
At Fitness First. Yeah. I just qualified as a PT. Mm. I didn't know my ass from my elbow. And I was very welcomed by you, and I needed something like that at the time. You know, yeah. I needed a bit of reinsurance and a bit of guidance, and you were one of those that helped me there. So I appreciate that.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So we'll start with that one, appreciation. What's your background? What do you do? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So about me, I'm a gym owner and a personal trainer from Leeds. I've been in the industry, fitness industry, all my life. It's not just a passing interest or a hobby for me. It's literally my whole life. Mm. And it has been since I was, you know, in my late teens, early 20s. I'm a former competitive bodybuilder. Did that for 10 years. Won British titles. Come runner-up in the World Championships. Compete at Mr. Universe. Came fifth. Packed in bodybuilding in 2017. Took up powerlifting. And won loads of stuff in that as well. I've got every British record in my class. I've got two world records and just won the British title.
Some feat.
Thank you very much.
Celebrity trainer as well, is that right?
I've met and trained quite a few celebrities over the years. I wouldn't call myself a celebrity trainer. I think it's a bit of a cheesy title.
Hollywood, that, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's like... I did train Tom Hardy for a bit before the Batman film. I wasn't his main trainer or anything, but he was in the area because his girlfriend was from York, and I did a few workouts with him while I was in the area. And then after that, I kept in touch with him ever since. Did quite a few online programs for him, helped him with his nutrition for about 2 or 3 years afterwards. And even got an invite to one of his movie premieres in London. Me and my then Mrs. Jem, who we'll talk a bit about later, I'm sure. We got invited to the world premiere of Legend, the one about the craze.
Oh, yes.
And
oh,
it was mad. We was on the red carpet at Leicester Square with thousands of people. I met Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger trained at my gym.
Oh, yeah, he just walked in, didn't he?
No, it was all planned.
Oh, was it? It looked like he just...
No. Arnold Schwarzenegger doesn't just walk in the gym. It was planned like 2 weeks before.
Okay.
I got a call off his PA. Arnold's coming into Leeds. We need a gym to train at. You can't just train at any gym. We've heard your gym's private. What would be the crack if you wanted to come there? Would we be able to close the gym, let him train? I says, of course. They says, how much do you want? I says, well, it's normally £10 for a guest pass. But because it's Arnie, I says, we can swing that and let him in for free. You know what I mean? But yeah, Arnie came to my gym, trained at my gym. Really nice guy. Mm. Just like you see on TV. Funny, engaging, took pictures with us all. And it was like... honestly, one of the best moments of my life. You know, when you were a kid, I'm sure you were the same. You know, you sat there, you're reading your Arnold Schwarzenegger encyclopedia, wanting to look like Arnie. And then, you know, 20, 30 years later, I've got the guy coming in my gym, training in my gym, and it was an unreal experience.
Yeah, that is madness.
Yeah, yeah.
That is madness.
It's like, you know, the Pumping Iron, the film.
Yeah.
You know, all that type of stuff. And he actually explains thinking about meeting his idol.
Yeah,
so then it's like
it was the same thing. It was just like that. It was his idol was Reg Park.
That's it.
And Reg Park was from Leeds.
Was it?
Yeah, that's right. So Reg Park, Arnold's hero, was from Leeds.
Wow.
So yeah, 40 years later, I'm getting to meet my hero Arnold at my gym in Leeds. It was unreal. Yeah.
What a time that was for sort of male idols. You know, Arnie, Stallone, Van Damme, all those. It was just absolute.
Hulk Hogan.
Absolutely awesome.
Hulk here, sorry.
No, it's all good. Yeah, we literally have. On the strength side as well, like you've always been one of those that's had like insane strength as a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Has that been, it's been just a natural progression for you, hasn't it, going from bodybuilding to powerlifting?
It was a very easy switchover, really. Like I say, I was trained for bodybuilding my whole life. Bodybuilding was always my passion. It came to the point of where I didn't really want to continue that anymore. I'd done it for 10 years, won loads of stuff. But the sacrifices that you have to make to do a show, at that high, it was like at that point in my life, it just became not worth it anymore. It's like, you know, I used to find it take me attention away from my relationships, my friendships, my business. And it were like, you know what? This other stuff at this point in life now is becoming more important. Yeah. So I need to pack this in. But because I love training, because I've got that competitive urge, because I was so strong, I thought, you know what? Let's have a little go at this powerlifting. And it was just a really easy transition over. I went straight into it and just started winning comps straight away, basically. And I've never looked back.
Can you explain what's the situation there with anyone that might want to get into powerlifting? You know, do we have to look at certain weight categories? What exactly do you have to do? Because not everybody knows, like, what is powerlifting? What's the difference? Some people get Olympic lifting and powerlifting mixed up. Can you explain?
Olympic lifting is more like clean and jerk and the snatch where they're doing the overhead stuff and that sort of thing. Powerlifting is a very basic sport. It's basically, I think it's like an extension of what people just do in the gym rather than it being too elite. It's like a clean and jerk. It's a squat, it's a bench, it's a deadlift. You do a one rep max on each in that order, squat first, bench second, deadlift third. And your score will be the three lifts together. That's called your total. That's your final score. There's weight categories. So obviously it's fair. You're not going to get a guy of 70 kilos against a guy of 150 kilos. So the weight classes generally go up in 5 and 10s. You've got 75s, 82s, 90s, 100s, so on and so forth. There's also age classes. So like I'm in the over 40s. I'm in the under 90, over 40s age group.
Right.
Wicked.
Okay.
And we're talking about before we started recording, the guys that are like smashing 7,000-8,000 calories, you've chose not to go down that route and stay kind of lean for you.
Yeah, because for me, as a bodybuilder in a background, if I'm honest, even though I compete in powerlifting and I love it, looking good and feeling healthy is still the most important thing to me. So I don't want to balloon up and get fat just to lift more weight. So for me, it's about, number one, having the physique I want to look in a certain way. Obviously then being healthy and being lean and, you know, making sure I'm eating all the right foods. And then those two things combined, I then I want to get as strong as possible while making sure these first two are looked after first. For me, it's about looking good, feeling good, being healthy. And then on top of that, being as strong as possible.
It's quite a tight ship to run, isn't it?
Yeah, because you've got to be really strict with your diet.
Yeah.
You know, like, yourself, if you eat too many carbs, you eat too many calories, you're going to get stronger, but then you're going to be out of your weight class. So for me, it's a really good thing because having to stick to a weight class helps me meet goal number one and two, which is looking good, feeling good and being healthy, because I can't let myself get too heavy. So I've got to keep an eye on my food at all times, keep my weight. I tend to hover about 92 kilos through the year and just lose the last 2 kilos before a comp.
What's your sort of maintenance intake then to keep you as optimal as you can be for body composition, for being strong, and where your weight is?
Getting that combination of the... So protein will remain constant, about 3 to 350 a day. And then carbs will be waved up and down depending on how I'm looking, how I'm feeling, and what I'm training. So, for instance, today, it's a non-training, it's a Wednesday's a rest day. I had carbs with my breakfast. My last three meals, so meals 2, 3, and 4, have been low carb. Meal 5, again, will be low carbs. So because it's an untraining day, it'll be low carbs. But tonight, on meals number 6 and 7, okay, I'm going to put some extra carbs in, high carbs, because I'm training legs in the morning. And then in the morning, around my leg workout, I'll eat high carbs, and then I'll go lower carb for the rest of the day. So what I'll do is, say if I eat an average of 300 carbs a day over the week, there'll be certain days where it's more and less, and the timing of the day of where I put them will depend on what I'm training. So tonight, because it's legs tomorrow morning, carbs will go up higher, okay? Around the workout tomorrow for recovery, carbs will stay high, but then the rest of the day, I don't really need them, so carbs will go low. So you need to carb cycle wave up and down to make sure you're getting your performance in the gym, so you're getting the carbs in at the right time. But you can't eat too many all day long because you're just going to put weight on and get fat, and you're going to be out your weight class.
Yeah. Also, what I've noticed with them, it's just the brain fog as well. You know, if you're consuming too many carbs consistently, you just you end up just very fatigued, and you aren't got...
That's due to your blood sugar levels not being stabilised, so that's why you get that sleepy feeling.
So I
find doing low carb food a day when I'm at work, if I don't need the carbs, like today I've not needed them, so I'll keep the carbs out, just get proteins, vegetables and fats. And then tonight I'll eat them at home, like I say. Then if you do get a bit sleepy, you're on the sofa, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's it. For the listeners, just the average person, obviously we're talking about very elite circumstances here, and you're very specific about what you do and very intentional about it. Let's just say the average person, they want to be in reasonably good shape.
Yeah.
They want to have good body composition. They want to feel healthy. They want to perform well to a certain degree. Mm. How do you go about it to the average person? What's your advice to those people?
Which part of it, the diet, the training, or a bit of both?
Bit of both.
All right, okay. Simple thing is, anybody should be doing some sort of strength training 3 days a week, I think. And the more serious you get, that might turn to 4 or 5. But 3 days a week is more than enough for the average person once you're training with intensity. And that's where most people lack. Most people go to the gym, they fuck about, they do a bit of this, they do a bit of that, they're looking at Instagram, and they got the intensity of a wet fart, you know what I mean? It's like, you need to be going there with, they like the word that you just used, with intention, with intent. Mm. You know, if you go to the gym for an hour, right, and most people are very time heavy, they haven't got loads of time to go to the gym. So if you're going to take 3 hours out your week, 3 1-hour workouts to go to the gym, right, and you're going to take that time out your schedule, why not go in and get the very most out of it? Mm. You know, I would say to people, what takes longer, a shit easy workout for an hour or a fucking really super intense workout for an hour? They both take an hour. So if I'm going to give it that time, the effort to get in the car, go to the gym, why not get the very most out of every single minute?
It's because it's hard.
Yeah, but then most people like avoiding hard.
No.
Everybody wants everything tomorrow, and life doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why should we choose hard things? That's a question.
Why should we choose hard things? Because, what a question. Doing hard stuff, well, if the easy route was the route that you should be taking, then, I don't know, it's like you need to be, anything that's worth having is going to take hard work, it's going to require discipline, and it's going to require effort. Yeah. Anyone you see who's got a lot of money or a nice car or a great physique or... Even if they're really good at playing the guitar, they've had to put a lot of effort in and a lot of discipline to become that good at whatever it may be. Mm. If it was really easy to be good at stuff, everyone would be good at stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty simple.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of reward, I think. This is the thing. I was on about this with someone this morning, right? This is a good point. It's like there's something very satisfying about setting yourself a goal, right, and doing the work to get you from, you know, the start of the goal to the finish of the goal, and putting that work in and going, fucking, I'll have achieved that. I've done that. Mm. You know, that was hard. I'm setting myself apart. Yeah. And every time you do something that's hard and you see it through, you're building a little more discipline in your body, a little more resilience, a little more confidence.
Yeah.
And that's why doing hard stuff is good, because it sets you up for the rest of your life. Mm. Then, you know, like there's kids nowadays who've never had anything hard. Mm. And if they get a big electric bill come through the door, they're going to go, oh my God, I've got a big electric bill. Yeah. And they're going to shit the pants. Mm. That's an example. But you know what I mean? It's like people need to do hard stuff. So when really hard stuff comes your way, you're going to be in a better position to deal with it.
Yeah. So you're more conditioned to it.
Yeah, that's right.
There's various cultures in there that have like rites of passage. So, you know, you go through something intentionally really hard, like to kind of say, you know, This is tough. Welcome to life, basically.
Yeah.
I think we should have that as standard in our country, but fortunately we don't, do we?
And that's the biggest thing I learned from doing bodybuilding shows. Because doing bodybuilding shows, when you're doing it to the level I was doing at, is probably one of the hardest things anybody can do ever. Mm. It's like everything in your body, right, is telling you to not do your cardio, sit down, don't do your training, because your body's so tired, right? But what you're doing, you're going against every emotion and thought in your body that's giving you, you know, sit down, don't exercise. You're going, right, well, I'm going to do an hour's cardio, I'm going to go train legs, and I'm going to eat some turkey.
Yes.
Right? Your body wants to sit down, eat a pizza, and have a nap. Yeah. But you're going against every single thing your body's telling you to do.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the end of that, there's something very self-satisfying about going, I got through that, and that was fucking really, really hard. Mm. I remember one year...
It's the reward of the condition that you end up in as well, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I think as well it's the reward of the condition, but I would say the journey's more important than the destination. Mm. It's the seeing those hard days through, that's the real win. Yeah. You know, when you get up and you wake up and you're like, I've got cardio to do this morning, I really don't want to fucking do it.
Yeah.
But you know what? You make yourself do it. Yeah. You know, you get that meal and you go... Oh my God, I've got turkey and green beans. I want to eat a burger. But you don't eat the burger, you eat the turkey and green beans. Mm. So every little thing that you do that you don't want to do, it's a building a block of confidence, you know, in your body. You know what I mean? And it just makes you feel good about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just setting up layers as well for the future, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You can transfer that discipline into other arenas, business, relationships, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You've got that self-belief and that confidence, haven't you, to see anything through. If you can do that, because that is literally, it's one of the hardest things. I think it's the abstinence of food that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah. But whilst exercising twice a day, so yeah. you're already tired, you're already yeah. depleted, and then you've got to do an hour's cardio and a workout. So it's you're already got the no food and you're really tired. Then because you're so hungry, you can't sleep properly as well. Yeah. So everything in your body, every ounce of your body is just exhausted, and you're going against those signals that your body's giving you to sit down and relax, to do more exercise, to do another workout, yeah. you know, to eat that low-calorie meal, you know, to not give in to those urges.
Yeah. Where did that fire come from? Because I know that you're quite open about talking about your past, talking about where you've been.
Yeah, I think it's a good example to set people. So when I was a kid, right, you know, I had quite a bad upbringing. My parents were drug dealers and into drinking and partying and stuff like that. You know, like not just partying, but like heavy drug use and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't want to really be around that. So I didn't have the best, you know, upbringing in life. And because I was around that, I probably became I became very unruly and just didn't really have any morals. And because I was in that environment growing up, I got kicked out of school when I was 14. Never did any qualifications. And then at 16, I had a fallout with my parents. Ended up having to move out of the family home. Went to live on my cousin's bedsit on his floor in bloody Harrells, which is one of the worst areas in Leeds. You know, we literally spent 2 years living in a bedsit, drinking cider, committing crimes. You know, not bad crimes, but just like, you know, like pay theft and, you know, just making bits of money so you could buy your alcohol and buy your drugs and stuff like that. We did that for about 2 years. And then it was just like a moment. And I don't know if you saw on my Instagram, a guy that really helped me died recently. I was at his funeral yesterday,
yeah,
right?
I did, yeah. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. And basically, when I was 18, I was going down a really bad path. And Ral, who was one of the guys who owned the local corner shop, he was into weight training. And he saw that I liked... Even though I was doing all this bad stuff, I liked weight training. And he opened a gym called Ral's Gym. And he goes, come down to my gym. He goes, come down. You love it. Training there. And he goes, I tell you what. He goes, you can have a membership. He goes, have a membership for 100 quid for a year, right? And you can just pay me £5, £10, whenever you've got any money, just pay it off over the year. I want you to come in. I want you to train. I know you're going to love it. And it's like he encouraged me to follow my passion of bodybuilding. I'd always been into it since I was a little kid. And he kind of pushed me into it. And when I started training, because I've got pretty good genetics, my response to training was pretty quick. So I realised I'm pretty good at this. And then Ral would give me more encouragement. And the better I got at training, the more seriously I took it, then the more I moved away from the other life, which was drinking, taking drugs, committing crimes. Before I knew it, I'm like, I've stopped taking drugs now. You know, I drink only socially and I've now got a job and I've stopped committing crimes. So it was like, over that period of that 1 to 2 years of getting into bodybuilding, the transition was, you know, a little horrible kid who wasn't adding anything to society, you know, drinking, taking drugs, committing crimes, to, you know, a year, 2 years later after that transitional period, to a pretty decent person who went to the gym every day, was pursuing bodybuilding and had a job.
Bodybuilding the savior then, would you say?
Well, I'd say not bodybuilding the sport, but training itself, just having a passion, having a goal, having a daily purpose. That was what took me out of that old life and gave him a new life. Without that little start I got off Raul, you know, who knows where I'd be today. And without the gym, and without me getting into bodybuilding, without me getting into training, I'd have definitely ended up in prison or dead or whatever, you know, who knows where I'd be. I definitely would be sat here talking to you guys today, that's for sure.
Yeah, look what you've done, you know, look what you've achieved in that career as well, you know. And still continuing to do so. You've been all over the world. So do you sit back and think, I'm fucking really proud of myself here?
Every now and again, but probably not as often as I should, because I'm always looking forward, never back. I always want to be better.
That's good. That's good, isn't it? Yeah. But reflection is also, I think, is important from time to time. Mm. Not to sit back and pat yourself on the back, because you would never move forward and do new things and challenge yourself.
Yeah.
But... No, well, I'm just going to give you that opportunity. I go, well done, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Fair play. You know, I probably don't do it as often as I should, because no matter what I do, I've just got that mindset. I always want to be a little bit better. I'm always looking for, like I say, every now and again, I go, you know what, I've done all right here. You know, from that little kid who were taking drugs and, you know, whatever, and doing all sorts of bad shit, to going, bloody hell, I've, you know, I've won titles in bodybuilding and powerlifting. You know, I've become the most successful personal trainer in Leeds. And I've got my own gym. I've met Arnie. I've met all my idols. And it's like, yeah. I mean, even when I think about it, I think I've done all right, actually. Yeah. But it's because I'm always looking at the next goal, what am I going to do next year, what am I going to do the year after. Mm. So because I'm very forward-thinking, I probably don't think about that enough and probably don't appreciate how well I've done enough, really.
Yeah, well done to you, mate. I can definitely say from that, from my side, looking in from the success of your, you know, I've followed your journey from when I met you in 2007, yeah. So, you know, fair play to you.
Thank you.
One thing that I want to touch upon, which I think is a very important theme that a lot of people talk about, that I don't think that people get right at all, and it's something that I think you've got a lot of wealth of knowledge in and you're well versed in, it's balance.
I thought you were going to say that, yeah.
tell us about your balance, because what I see is a very hard-working, disciplined person who goes out and competes, puts himself out of the comfort zone, but you enjoy life as well.
Yeah, I think it's one thing, especially now as a sort of elder statesman in my 40s, it's one thing I'm always look back and I think I've really got it right. Because too many people with bodybuilding become too all-encompassed in it. And they ruin the relationships, they ruin the friendships, they ruin the careers. And it's like, you know, it's like, listen, I'm going to take it really seriously. I'm going to train really hard. I'm going to stick to my diet. I'm going to do everything I should. I still want to enjoy life as well because, you know, I never wanted to get to my age now and think, oh, I've missed out on everything. I don't feel like I've missed out on anything. I feel like, and there's a story here, and you're gonna probably touch on this subject later, but I'm going to bring it up now because it's fitting for this segment, is when my wife Jen was in the hospice, she obviously she knew he was dying at the time. She sat and we spoke about this a lot, and she said, you know what? She goes, I don't want to die at 39, but I feel like I've got the best out of everything I've done. Our relationship's been amazing. I've got the best set of friends. I've had a really good career. She did bodybuilding. But we've had more nights out, more trips to Ibiza, more holidays. We travelled the world. We felt like we got the balance of everything, you know, in our relationship. And Jem, at that point in life, she was like, well, I don't want to die at 39, but at least I feel like I've got the most out of every aspect of my life. Not one part got too much attention, so it took away from the other parts. And that's the key to balance, really.
Mm. Yeah. Can you... Now that we're on this theme, can you go back for the, you know, just for anyone that's thinking, oh my God, what the hell, you know, it's such a young age to go. What happened there? How long ago was it?
So my long-term partner, Gemma, who I was with for 16 years, from 2004 to 2020, she got cancer in 2018, and she died July the 22nd, 2020, so just over 3 years ago. And obviously it was obviously a horrendous time and a sad time of my life, you know?
Yeah.
Did it knock you off completely, everything, or did you have to stay somewhat operating, or?
Luckily, if I'm honest, when she got really ill, it coincided with COVID, which was the best thing ever, because it meant, so COVID for me was a blessing, because it meant I had to close my gym, close my business, and I could just put 100% of my attention into looking after Gem and spending every minute I could with her. So that was a real blessing for us, was COVID. It gave us every minute together. I didn't have to worry about my business. I didn't have to worry about what's happening at the gym. I didn't have to worry about my clients. All I could focus on 100% was Gem and making sure her life was as comfortable as possible at that time.
Yeah, that's a tough thing for anybody to go through, but given, you know, the age and everything, it's just absolutely no age to go.
We'd been together so many years. We'd grew our whole adult lives together.
Did that change your perspective on your balance, on your training, on your goals? Did it change anything about
it? Did you, it was, or probably the most life changing experience.
Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, I don't mind talking about it. Obviously, is. You know, Jem died in my arms at 39 years old. And it's like, we've been together 16 years at that point. So it's like, you know, to see the person you love die in front of you, if that doesn't change your life, I don't think anything will change your life. Mm. And obviously it was the saddest moment of my life, but I probably learned the most lessons from that moment. Because what you look at when you see that happening, you go, well, that's going to be me one day. Yeah. You know, and everybody lives every day like they're not going to die. But when you see someone you love die in front of you, it reminds you, well, that's going to be you one day. And the most important thing I took from it is... Just like Jem, when she spoke about her life, she was very happy with what she'd done and the balance of everything, you know, and it made me realise probably my main goal in life, now we talk about goals, my main goal in life is to be in that hospice bed, whenever it may be when I'm older, and look back and know I've made the very most of every single day that I've been here, mm. that I've made the best choices possible, and that I've got no regrets. That, to me, is the key to life.
Yeah. I think that's real success, isn't it? Mm. If you can sit there and say that, you know, when it's time
yeah.
to go,
yeah,
that's real success.
And that's the goal. I don't want to sit there with any regrets. Mm. I don't want to feel like I've made any poor choices. Mm. I don't want to feel like I've missed out on anything that I could have done. You know, I want to achieve everything I want to achieve. I want to do as much traveling as possible, have as much good relationships as possible, and it just makes you really realize how valuable life is and really make you appreciate every day that you're here.
Yeah.
For those people that are hearing that are like, shit, this is really resonating with me, but they don't know where to start because they're too, I don't know, they know that they're stuck in some kind of rut.
Mm.
What do you say to somebody like that if they come up to you and they're like, I'm totally stuck here, what?
Well, no one's ever really stuck. You know, being stuck's a choice. You know what I mean? So that's the first thing I would say with that. If you think you're stuck, you're choosing to be stuck. There's always a different choice to be made. So I think most people tend to get stuck in jobs they don't like, relationships they're not happy in. And you know what, you can always start again. Tomorrow's always a new day. So if you think you're stuck today, well, wake up tomorrow with a different mindset and just change what you're stuck in. You know, if you're unhappy in relationship, end the relationship. If you don't like your job, okay, well, you might not be able to quit your job because you've got bills to pay. You've still got hours spare in an evening to retrain into something else, start a side business on the side, doing an online business to earn enough money to be able to quit that job. Mm. So there's always a choice. So if you're stuck, then that's down to you and the fact that you're not willing to work hard enough to get out of the situation that you're stuck in.
Do you know what I think one of the main ingredients to that is training. Mm. Because you're training your brain, you're training to overcome.
Mm. And that goes back to our first thing we said about what's the benefits of training and the bodybuilding and all those hard things that I've been through. It conditions you to make decisions and things that most people find hard. You're a bit more conditioned to get through them because you constantly do hard stuff every day.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest benefits of training.
Yeah.
And it's the values that it creates within you.
Discipline.
So discipline. Yeah. Hard work.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. And then it transfers over to business.
That's right.
You need the exact same values as you do training to own a business.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a coincidence that a lot of people that train are also entrepreneurs.
I don't think anyone who's really successful nowadays, you see, everybody exercises. Mm. They understand the value of it. Because if you've got a healthy body and you've got discipline to go to the gym every day, then you're going to operate better in your career. You know, if somebody's a slob and they're lazy, you know, no disrespect, but that laziness and that slob mindset is probably going to filter over into every other aspect of the life.
How you do one thing.
It's how you do everything. That's one of my favourite sayings.
There you go.
Yeah.
Truly believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us about the powerlifting, Rick? Going back to that.
Yeah.
What's your schedule? Speaking of training again, going back onto this theme, you know, how do you go about your general week? Do you train intuitively? Do you have a set program that you follow a protocol for a certain amount of weeks? All those sorts of things.
So training wise, I have a program, obviously. You know, if you're going to train to the level that I am, you need to have some sort of plan.
Yeah.
You can't just wing it. That's the first thing. And what I do, I train certain... So I still train more like a bodybuilder, even though I'm a powerlifter. I just train certain body parts on each day. So, like, for instance, this week, I did deadlifts and back on Monday. I did some pressing and bench with some chest and some triceps on Tuesday. Wednesday, today's a rest day. Tomorrow I'll do legs. Friday I'll do shoulders, abs and calves, and then Saturday I'll do arms. So just one body part a day, split over the week. When the powerlifting comp comes round, so I start training for the World Championships in September, which the World Powerlifting Championships is on 2nd of November, so I'll start training for that about 8 weeks before. It'll become a little more specific, and I'll, instead of doing, say, the bodybuilding shoulder workout, I'll put a second bench workout in. And on the leg day, at the moment, it's more hypertrophy-based work. I'll take a couple of the hypertrophy exercises out and do a little more powerlifting. But the structure of the week remains pretty much the same.
For anyone that doesn't know, the difference between hypertrophy and strength,
yeah,
where you are in terms of the threshold of the numbers that you're hitting in a set, because not everyone understands these terms.
Yeah.
So what is hypertrophy and then what is strength?
So hypertrophy is basically training in a rep range of anywhere from 6 to 15, I would say, to failure. You try to damage the muscles. So when you damage the muscles, they're going to rebuild bigger and bigger and stronger. So hypertrophy means you try to build size. Whereas with strength, it's a different mechanism. You're not trying to build size with strength. With strength training, you're going to do more 1 to 5 reps, okay, and you're going to work on strengthening the muscles, obviously the muscles, but the little tendons, the ligaments, training the central nervous system used to getting to using those weights. But the muscle's not really going to be under tension long enough on a set of 2 or 3 reps to really have much breakdown and cause much hypertrophy. So that's the difference between strength and hypertrophy training.
Nice.
So recovery, Ricky,
good question.
Obviously, you're putting your body under a lot of stress. Mm. What's your favourite ways to recover, mate?
The most important aspect to recovery is definitely nutrition. Nutrition is the number one thing. Then sleep and hydration, obviously. But nutrition is the number one thing. Mm. You know, it's like if you're not getting your nutrition right, you're underselling how much you can recover. And if you're not recovering properly, you're not going to be trained. You're not going to be able to get as much out of your training. So nutrition is the key to everything, I think.
Mm. That's interesting. I've never really looked at nutrition as purely a recovery tool, but
100%. Like, particularly when it comes to protein and protein synthesis and needing to rebuild that damaged tissue.
Which is why I don't like fasting, because I was on about fasting earlier.
Yeah, let's go there. Talk to us about that. Why do you not like fasting?
Well, because if you want to be optimal for your hypertrophy and strength training, you want to be in a positive nitrogen balance. You want to be having your body with certain nutrients in it, you know, as many hours in a day as possible, so you're recovering to your best abilities, okay? And if you go long periods of time without the right nutrients in your body, without, you know, any protein in your bloodstream, you know, your body's going to go in what's called a catabolic state, and it's going to start using the muscle tissue as energy. So you want to be in an anabolic state rather than a catabolic state. And if you're fasting, your body's going to be more likely to go into a catabolic state. Catabolic means muscle breakdown.
Yeah. However, we did see a recent post where you chose to fast.
Can you tell us
about the decision? Why did you do that?
Good question. So I did a fast after my last powerlifting comp. I did the British finals. I think it was about 4 or 5 weeks ago now, which I won. And basically, I chose to fast after that because the week of a comp is not the healthiest. Mm. You know, you're doing certain things. You're doing a carb depletion to make weight, then a carb load. The day before the comp, I ate 8,000 calories and I think it was 1,200 grams of carbs. The day before the comp, you had 1,200 grams of carbs. So, you know, the week you're doing a carb deplete, a carb load, a water load, and then a water cut. Then you do 1,200 grams of carbs the day before the comp. And then you're doing 20 grams of creatine a day to load up. And then on the day of the comp, I had 4 of these TNT pre-workouts. And those pre-workouts equal, this is not healthy, so don't follow my lead on this. I worked out the caffeine content. It was the equivalent of 18 Red Bulls. So the day of the comp...
What's the milligram intake?
350 in each one.
Oh.
315 each when I had 4.
Did you actually grow wings?
So it was 1,400 milligrams of caffeine. So I worked out, it's actually like 17 and a half Red Bulls. So I consumed that in like a 4 or 5 hour period. So all the carbs, the carb load, the carb depletion, all the creatine, the 1,400 milligrams of caffeine, you've just fucking put so much shit in your body to try and win that comp that most people after winning a British title, they're probably like, oh, let's have a beer. I was like, nah. I went home, I had salmon, I had some broccoli, just to put some goodness in my body before I started my fast. That was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. Okay, and I didn't do anything till, I think I ate my first meal at 10 in the morning. So it worked out at like, I think it was like 18 hours. Mm. I was going to try and go at 12, but I was absolutely fucking starving by that point. So I thought, I've done 18, that'll do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in that 18 hours, I drank about 5-6 litres of water. So just basically cleansed my whole body out.
Yeah.
And I definitely would recommend that for anyone. Listen, when you try to win a comp, that moment in time, health might not be your primary concern. You want to win your comp. Mm. But then afterwards, you've got to try and do things to balance it out and balance the scale back into a healthy realm.
Mm. Yeah, people ask me the question about training and risk and reward. Mm. You know, like going for those extra lifts.
Yeah.
How you eat in accordance to perform.
Mm.
And I always say, when you're going to compete, you go all in. Yeah. And you do anything that you can 100%. Because you're competing.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, in the build-up, it's got to be progressional. But you don't want to do anything that's going to compromise your health.
Yeah.
You don't want to compromise getting injured. Mm. Sometimes you got to test the waters a little bit, but do you go for that extra rep if you don't actually believe you're going to do it?
Mm.
That's subjective as well. But I think that's a prime example of you've still got health as a primary concern for you. You go all in when you compete and then you pull back out again, you regain.
Tip the balance. Yeah, so the week of the comp, you're accepting the balance of the scale is not going to be, you know, super healthy. You're like, yeah, okay, we're going to compromise that for that week. That's fine. I want to win. But okay, but then as soon as the comp's done, want to try and balance the scales back out again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important for anyone to hear that is competing. You see a lot of powerlifters, for example, and there are a good few stone overweight out of the majority of them.
Yeah, that's it, especially in the higher weight classes, obviously.
Yeah, and I think it is it's important to recognise that you can still do sports like this. You can still be healthy.
Mm.
You know, speaking of health, do you look at your own blood work and things like that? Do you
Usually
keep an eye on that?
Once or twice a year.
Yeah.
See if there's anything that he's looking at.
Yeah.
Last couple I've been absolutely fine, so there's been nothing alarming in there. Yeah. So I've been fine. But I think it's important.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, if you're using certain supplements and whatever, you know, it's always got to be like, you know, you accept a certain health risk to certain things you're doing, but let's try and tip the scales the other way with everything else we can do to stay healthy.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to hammer your body from all angles. It's like the people, you know, they want to take bodybuilding drugs and then they want to go out every Friday and Saturday night and take party drugs and then they want to do this, they want to do that, they want to drink. It's like, listen, you're hammering your body from every angle.
Yeah.
Then they're eating McDonald's every day. It's like, it's not any one thing that's bad, it's everything.
Yeah, it's very similar with the background that I come from with rugby because it's, you know, it's played by pretty crazy individuals, you know what I mean?
You've got to be a little bit wired up.
To take the hits that you do, get up and keep going. But it's the whole culture of it and everything is extreme. So it's lifting to extreme, running to extreme, playing to extreme, partying to extreme.
Yeah.
Everything is out of whack. And there's a lot of players, even full-time professionals, they're not that particularly healthy.
Mm.
I think it's starting to change a little bit now. But certainly that's coming from, you know, a mad sport. And it's kind of similar, isn't it? It's quite an extreme sport. And then you get extreme individuals that are attached to it.
Extreme sports are going to attract attract extreme individuals. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, people don't try and squat 300 kilos or go around headbutting people in a pitch, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's not normal behaviour, is it? So, you know, them things are going to attract, you know, crazy individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, again, coming back, we can have balance. We can focus on other things. We can have wellness involved in that.
We can at least do the things that we can control. Control the controllables.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I think that's the main thing. So, you know, if you can drink more water, eat more vegetables and, you know, try and balance out some of the bad stuff you're doing, then you should be doing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to swing it slightly in a different direction, mate. I want to talk about masculinity.
Okay.
Obviously, there's quite high-profile figures talking about masculinity at the moment. Yeah. You've got your Andrew Tates and...
he's the main one, isn't he?
Andrew Tates. But yeah, there's a few others. Like, there's a chap I listened to called Bedros Koulian. He's a fitness entrepreneur from US. It's a quite a hot topic. The word toxic masculinity is getting thrown about. How do you define masculinity?
Oh, what a question. How do I define masculinity?
From your own personal experience.
Someone who can make their own decisions and stick with their own decisions. I think that's one thing, I think. Mm. You know, being true to yourself, true to your word. Mm. And making people around you feel safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Protect.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good definition. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of quite extreme opinions that come from the likes of Andrew Tate and stuff.
Some of his stuff I really like. You know?
Yeah, listen.
Some of his stuff I don't. Some of his stuff I do really like.
It talks a lot of sense. And I don't mind saying that.
One thing Andrew Tate does promote that's really good is he always talks about exercise and how important exercise is, you know, for having a strong mind. Yeah. So that's one message that he gives out, which is, I think, is a really good message. Mm.
And there were a guest that we had on previously, a chap called Mike Bates, wasn't there? And he's talking about, like, true masculinity is actually being in touch with your feminine side as well, as in having compassion and empathy. And I thought that was quite an interesting take as well.
Yeah, I suppose also true masculinity as well, that's a good point, is a real man won't feel the need to follow the crowd.
Mm.
I think that's what I would always say. I've always been one of those people, I don't really care what anybody thinks. Mm. I'm going to follow my own path. You know, I'm not going to follow the crowd. And I think that's, it always takes a bigger person to not want to follow the crowd.
Mm.
And I think too many people nowadays don't want to have the same haircut as everybody else. They want to do what everybody else is doing because they want to fit in.
Mm.
Whereas I think, you know, being a real man or just a good, you know, wholesome person, you're going to just follow your own path. Yeah. Do your own thing. Don't follow the crowd.
Mm. I think there's a time to listen, and then there's a time, you know, when you've got to lead as well.
Mm.
Obviously, listen to the people that are maybe ahead of you in the game, and that what you know you want to get inspired by them type of people. But then you've got
there's a difference from being inspired than following the crowd, though.
Yeah.
So it's always good to have inspiration, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, whoever, Dorian Yates, whoever, you know, yeah, those yeah. people that I looked up to
yeah.
as a kid.
Yeah,
but. You know, you have your people you're inspired by, but I think following the crowd is generally doing things you don't really want to do to try and fit in with the crowd.
Yeah,
that's what you want to avoid. Mm. Don't be a people pleaser.
Correct.
Mm. Yeah, follow the heart's desire.
Rather than following the crowd.
Yeah.
Good shout,
Dan. Speaking of which, that ties in with goals. You know, where are you at now? Obviously, you've achieved what you've achieved in your bodybuilding career, your powerlifting career. You've just won a GB record?
British title, yeah. I got a world record as well.
World record.
Yeah.
In your weight class.
Yeah.
So you've achieved a lot of things personally. Mm. You've achieved a lot of success with your clients. You've achieved a lot of success with your business.
Yeah.
What now?
I actually sat down the other week and wrote some goals because without goals, life's pretty pointless, I think. And life is all of... This is why you said about, do you ever sit and appreciate things? It's like, well, I should probably do it more often, but the reason why I don't appreciate what I've done as much is because I'm always looking for the next goal, always looking for the next thing to work towards.
Mm.
So for me, you know, with strength's a really easy one. If I benched 190 kilos at my other comp the other week, well, the next one I want to do 195. It's as simple as that. You know, so I've got a picture on my phone of the next car I want to buy. Now, the reason why I've got a picture of my next car I want to buy, and I've set myself a target of buying it next May for summer next year, is it's not about the materialistic value of the car. It's about setting myself the goal so I can work hard enough on a day-to-day basis and then reward is the car. I'm not even really that bothered about the car, but I want to give myself something that I can work hard for.
It's like the physique, isn't it? The muscle mass, the strength, everything. It's the same sort of thing, isn't it, really?
Mm, so it's always about having goals. Like I say, I've got, right, I want to get this car next year. You know, I want to get the gym earning X amount of money by this point. You know, I want to go on this many holidays next year. Sometimes, like I say, I'll set goals which are stuff like materialistic stuff, like the holidays, like the car. But it's not really the holidays and the car, like I say. It's I want something that's going to make me get out of bed in the morning.
Mm.
And if I set myself certain goals to hit here, whether it's just buying a new car, what it does, it makes my day-to-day life better.
Mm.
So it makes that day, I'm going to get out of bed, right, okay, I want to earn this, I want to do that, I want to achieve this. So the car's just there to make me work harder on a day-to-day basis. Again, it's not really about the destination of the car, it's about the journey to it.
Yeah.
That's what I enjoy. I enjoy the feeling alive, getting out of bed in the morning because I've got goals to hit, because I want to achieve, I want to be better. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. And how do you generally manage your day-to-day stuff? Do you have, you know, for example, a bit of self-reflection time in the morning, so you can plan? Do you train at particular times? Then all those sorts of things. Are you quite
regimented?
You know, regimented and structured in terms of obviously that's what bodybuilding is.
Yeah.
So do you still?
Oh yeah. I mean, I eat the same times every day. I train at 8:15. So every day my alarm goes off.
It's very specific.
Not 20 past, not 10 past, it's 8:15. I get up at 6 every day, breakfast at 6:30. I get to the gym at 7. I have a first client at 7 till 8. I then drink a coffee. I start training at 8:15. Finish training about 9:25. I have a protein shake and some fruit at 9:30. Then so my day is the same. You know, like, I like feeling organised, and I like following a set day-to-day protocol. I actually feel a bit lost. I'd feel a bit lost if I didn't have that. It's like, what do people do? Just go, I'm going to get up this morning and have beans on toast. I don't know. It's like, I know what I'm eating a week on Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? I could tell you what time I'm going to get out of bed a week on Friday. Yeah. I could tell you which client I'm going to be training 2 weeks on Tuesday. You know, it's like everything I do is always pretty, well, not pretty, pretty very, very, you know, pre-planned.
Yeah.
I like being organised.
You said you're normally asleep at this time, didn't you?
I do, yes. That's what I said. Every day, you know, I tend to finish work most days about 3 o'clock in the gym, 3, 4. And then what I do between 4 and usually 5, half 5, I have a bit of quiet time. So I'll turn my phone off every day for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Okay, split the day into two halves. I have a bit of time on the sofa, put a bit of crap on TV, not to watch, just to sort of help me drift off.
Yeah.
And I usually have about 45 minutes, an hour sleep on the sofa every afternoon. Then I'll get up and I'm ready for the second half of my day, which is my admin, my food prep, my social media. Yeah. And I tend to do that between 6 and 9 on an evening.
And again, that's like ultimate discipline to stay in rhythm with that.
I don't find that it's not discipline because I like doing it. Discipline is doing something you don't want to do and making yourself doing it. Doing what you like doing every day is not discipline because I like doing it.
Yeah. Obviously, there's still got to be days though. There's still got to be days where you do it once.
Yeah, some days. But I've kind of, what I've done is I've tailored my life to the exact life that I want. You know, I get up at the time I want to get up. I have the clients to train at the times I want to train them. I train at the time I prefer to train at. You know, my day is set, so I have a quiet time every day at the time I like to have a quiet time. I get a bit of an energy dip about 3, 4, so I've factored that into my day.
Yeah.
And I get a second wind in the evening, so I've factored that into my day. I like going to bed at the same time. So it's like I've actually spent the last, 10 years formulating my life so everything is done exactly as how I like to do it.
Again, intentional. It's like you're literally wanting your life to run exactly how you want to run it.
And I've got it exactly how I want it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Awesome, mate.
Yeah. Where do we find you? What's your business called? If anybody's interested in the Leeds area, or even if you want to travel to go see where you are. Is it semi-private?
It's semi-private. So what it means, my gym's called 1RM. It's in Leeds, just on the outskirts of Leeds Town Centre. It's semi-private, so it's built around the PTs. We have 8 PTs, and initially it was a PT studio, but it's just a bit too big to be a PT studio. We've got so much amazing kit that all the clients were asking to join. So he says, you know what, we'll open it up to the clients. What I did, I got a 24-hour access door fitted, so people can just come and go as they please. And I've just opened it up. We have a sort of cap of 125 members. We're on about 100 at the moment, so we're pretty close to our cap. I don't want it to be too busy in there. I want people to be able to come in, enjoy the training. The PTs, be able, you know yourself as a PT, there's no worse than having to work around peak hours in a commercial gym, you know, so there's never too many people in there. So if you want a PT in my gym, you can always get on the kit you want. You know, the PT's not having to struggle. So basically all the things that I ever wanted as a PT when I was working in commercial gyms, I've given my gym all of those things. Loads of great equipment, not too many people, good music, you know, good lighting, so when you finish your workout you can have a pause, obviously.
That's important. That's as well. The music as well.
Tell us about the music.
Well, we just have a selection of house music, rock music, rap. It'll change day to day, but always has to be some up tempo.
Yeah.
I went to train at David Lloyd the other day. I was training with a pal. Okay, kit, nice environment, but it was like a morgue. The music was on real low and it was shite. So it's like, I was training with the pal, so you create your own energy, but I thought, if I were training on my own in here, it's like you need atmosphere, it's, you need massive, energy, isn't it? And it's like the music of the gym will set the tone and set the energy. So when you walk in, you feel lifted, you feel energized, and then you're going to get 5-10% more out of your training. So I think music in the gym is such a big thing. They have to get that right.
Yeah. Lighting as well. I think a lot of gyms are getting this really, really badly wrong, where they've got, it's looking like a bloody nightclub in Dubai.
Really dark.
What's that about?
Yeah.
That's not helping.
No. David Lloyd did a day one, and it's too dark.
It's mood lighting. Yeah. It makes you want to mooch. Yeah. Like, you don't want to.
My gym's real bright.
You don't. Yeah. That's how it should be. Again, it comes down to energizing.
You walk in a gym with bright lights and loud music, you're going to go ping. Yeah. You're going to want to train. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're going to gym with low music. You know, and dark, it's like, I might as well, you know, it's like you're going to want to bring your missus in and have a little quiet time with your missus rather than training, do you know what I mean? You know, it's not setting the right tone.
Yeah, exactly that. So, yeah, no, I think that is an important thing to touch on. So any gym owners, if you're putting this mood lighting shite on, don't do it. It's not helping.
That's, I agree.
It's really not helping.
Get some proper lighting, some fucking proper music on.
Yeah, man. That's the one. Turn it up. Yeah. That's the one. So where do we find you? Where is your gym? Social media wise, all that sort of thing, if anyone wants to reach out to you.
1RM Elite in Leeds. It's just on the outskirts of Leeds Town Centre. You can find me on Instagram. I can't remember my Instagram name, but just put Ricky Moore in, you'll find it. Yeah. I think it's Ricky Moore 1RM.
1RM,
yeah, I think it is. Something like that. But Ricky Moore, you'll find me. But come check us out in Leeds. Semi-private gym, all the best kit, great community atmosphere. We've got all the best PTs that Leeds has to offer.
Nice. Hi, man. Nice. You rehearsed that one, haven't you?
I've said it 1,000 times on videos for Instagram. You know what I mean?
No, nice one. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for travelling out to see us.
No worries, mate. A pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Top man.
Thank you.